Welcome back to another episode of Interview You. This is your host, Lewis Shine. And hey, I got a special guy on the show today, someone I met back in my college days at Miami University. I'm so excited to have him on because I know what those days meant to me. And just knowing him back in that time, it was just a special time for a lot of athletes. So without further ado, I want to welcome to the show today, Josh Betts. How's it going, man?
I'm good, brother. How are you tonight?
Doing well, man. I appreciate you taking time out of your schedule and away from the family, man, to come on and talk about your story, man. So as always, man, I like to go back and start things off with just finding out a little bit about yourself, man. So tell us, man, where you grew up, man, and how the game got started for you in your life.
Yeah, I grew up in Dayton, Ohio, in a town called Vandalia Butler. It's a Division I, Division II, depending on what sport we're in, athletic city. You know, not historically known for being terribly successful in all the sports, but baseball, we've been pretty consistent. Basketball, we had a number of years there. You know, football was one where, you know, success in the 80s, I think, and then we had a lull there for a while. But you know, we were fortunate to grow up in a good town with really great people who you weren't afraid to have your kids go out and come back when the lights and the street lights came on. You know, we had a pretty safe environment with good friends, and was really blessed, you know, to be raised by two wonderful parents. We have three siblings, two brothers and a sister, and really just grew up playing as much outside as we could. And, you know, at that time we didn't have much to entertain us outside of, you know, Nintendo's here and there and maybe a Game Boy for road trips. But it was really nice to grow up in the times that we did. I mean, you're similar age as I am. I think our age group is really special. They call me the Xennials, between a millennium X and the millennials, Generation X and millennials, just because we got to see and experience a lot of what we remember growing up without, you know, the cell phones and without really the internet until, you know, middle school, almost into high school. So we did all our stuff old school. We did, you know, book reports out of books, and you know, we did papers looking up things in the dictionary, and we didn't have all this stuff to entertain us and keep us busy. So we play outside and build forts and, you know, play ball and hide and seek and capture the flag and whatever we could do to entertain ourselves. And I'm not saying the kids don't do that still these days, but just not as much. So I'm so thankful that I grew up in the time frame that I did and got to experience really the tech evolution that happened in the last probably 20 years, 25 years. And so I think that kind of shapes a lot of our generation, because we've seen our parents you know, grind. We've seen our parents and family work hard, and some of them you just put their nose down in these long careers and really just do whatever they had to do to put food on the table sometimes. And I think things have changed a little bit, and you know, kids are finding different ways to do things now. It doesn't necessarily mean they're the wrong ways, but it was a good time. And grew up playing baseball, football, basketball, really those three sports pretty consistently from 7, 8, 9 years old all the way through high school, and then just chose football at Miami. So yeah, man, just really fortunate and glad to be grow up where I am, even though it gets cold here in the winter every once in a while. But I enjoyed Ohio and have no you know, no hesitation to raise my family here in Ohio.
Yeah, man, Ohio's special, man. You know, I did some of my growing up in Lima, Ohio. I went to Lima Senior, going on those road trips south to the GMC schools. We always see the Vandalia signs. And then before you know it, I found out that I had to go through there to get to the airport sometimes. And so, you know, but very familiar with the area. Did a lot of, you know, spent a lot of time in Dayton as well, man. Got family there. And so Ohio, man, I loved it. I loved my time there. And in terms of just your time, you know, you were in three different sports. What made you, was there something that made you kind of shade towards football, or was it just opportunity, or, you know, what happened there?
I think at that time it just kind of resolved itself. I mean, naturally baseball and football were always kind of the sports I was that I excelled more at. Although I could compete in basketball, it wasn't quite as natural. You know, but baseball at that time was my love growing up. And then as I got older, you know, seventh, eighth, really freshman year, I started to realize that, you know, I could separate myself in football a little bit easier when I started going to these camps. You know, we started going to Ohio State camp and Michigan camp and Kentucky camp. And you start hearing about these kids are getting recruited. And that's kind of right when like bucknuts.com started and some of these old recruiting sites. And you see some names that were out there. And you know, I didn't get a whole bunch of mention, but I know the guys that did. And I go to camps and I see them throw. And I was like, dude, I can stand toe to toe with these guys. So mm-hmm. I realized that football was kind of my best opportunity, my best path. When it came to competing. So I just kind of naturally transitioned. The only really difference was for me is I didn't play summer ball. So baseball would end, I think, end of May. And then typically people would transition to summer ball and they'd play for a couple months. Well, I just took that time to do the football camp circuit and start throwing with the receivers and doing routes and really focusing more on football. That's the beauty about football is you do have a natural built-in little off season there, about 2 months, really June and July, that you can focus on football without necessarily giving up a sport in order to do so. I think any other sport, you're almost forced to give something up if you want to focus, because it's such a challenge now these days with all the training that's available to do three sports and to do it well.
Yeah.
So I was very happy with my decision. I still have a passion for baseball and a passion for basketball as I'm watching my kids and help out with them and coach a lot of the sports. But football was just something that, you know, I could separate myself from others at, and I embraced it. And it's been real good to me. Some of the relationships, obviously a wonderful degree I was able to get at Miami of Ohio, my experience there, and, you know, met so many great people through that, and blessed that football's given me that path.
Man, that's really good stuff right there. So you made that choice. I was going to ask you what's your favorite. You said baseball was your love. And what was the recruiting process like? You know, you saw where you could, you know, get some separation there and stand toe-to-toe with players and different things, going to these different camps. What was that moment like when you started to get interest from schools, and what led up to your ultimate decision to choose Miami, Ohio?
You know, I think it's obviously it's changed. Things have changed now. I think college coach is one of the most demanding jobs out there when it comes to athletics. The 24/7 recruiting that goes on now is to me exhausting. That these coaches have to blow these kids up and feed their egos all the time to get them to commit to their schools and send them texts and tweet them and post on their Instagram and tag them on everything. Like, it is nonstop because we've developed these kids where they feel like they need this positive reinforcement all the time. If they're not getting it, then they choose other schools. So it's changed a little bit. Back in the day, it was similar, but it was old school. It was through your high school coach. It was through letters in the mail. You know, how personal they were was kind of where they separated themselves from other recruits and other coaches. So it was a neat process. And I think nothing's really changed from a lot of these kids is you don't know unless someone teaches you or coaches you or helps you out. So I got a kid down the street from me is a wonderful ball player, and he's going through the process right now, and he's in Dublin, Jerome, and I know his parents real well, and I've seen him grow and, you know, mature, become just a stud. And he's kind of walking this path of preferred walk-ons, and he's got, you know, 15-ish offers as preferred walk-on. He's a little frustrated. I'm like, dude, just be patient. I'm telling you, one, you know, to have that many options, you're going to find yourself landing on a team. And if you don't get a scholarship, then it's up to you to get one in the first year. And I truly believe watching how the MAC played out and with the transfer portal making it even worse, you know, you see 20-something kids coming in every year in a recruiting class, and 10 of them are going to flake out, 5 are going to quit, 5, you know, a couple are going to flunk out, 2 of them will have bad attitudes or bad work ethic. So if you can stick it in, do all the things you're supposed to do, show up on time or early, put your nose down, hit the books, be polite, be a good person, bust your butt. I'm telling you, they are looking for kids like that they can give scholarships to. So if you can do that, and you're fortunate enough to have a little bit of athletic ability and height, and this kid does, you know, I keep telling them to be patient, man. It is it's a different process, and a lot of people don't know about it, and you kind of learn as you go. And I was fortunate enough to see enough of it to where I can kind of give some advice here and there as well, and I think kids are looking for it.
Yeah, and you're right about that, man. It's, you know, I had to walk on when I got to college, and you know, that's quite a process. But I mean, it's yours for the taking. You can go after it and get it if you want it, you know. So I like what you're saying about the young man and just some of the advice that, you know, you have there to offer, man, and just seeing him grow and things like that. For you, man, what was that? What was that defining moment for you that said, hey, I'm going to Miami? What was it about that school or the coaches in that recruiting process? What was it for you?
It was still, even being only an hour away, I didn't know much about Miami. I didn't know much about many of the MAC schools. If it wasn't Ohio State, you wouldn't pay much attention growing up, you know? So, I mean, when I started the recruiting process, you know, I got letters from all the Big Ten schools and got letters from some of these big schools, and Stanford flew in to see me. And so that's where, like, my head was, because those are nationally known teams, you know. And then I remember we took and I've been recruited, and I went to UK games and I've been on the sidelines for them, been on the sideline for Michigan game, you know, sideline for Northwestern game. I did a lot of the recruiting stuff between my sophomore, junior, and before my senior year. And we went to a 7-on-7 camp in Miami. I'm like, Miami's not that far away. So I went to the 7-on-7 camp, and we did pretty well. And kind of at the end of it, they brought me in, Coach Hepner brought me in and offered me a scholarship. And, you know, that was really my first exposure to what Oxford, Ohio was. And then from there, you got a couple more offers. Didn't, you know, go lights out as I wanted to. Got an offer for Akron and Ball State, and, you know, a late interest from UC. But Miami, between those three, that was, to me, it was a relatively easy choice, because I said, you know, what's going to happen if I don't go to the next level, which is, that's the majority of people, and that's your probabilities, you're not. So if I don't go to the next level and I end up, you know, getting hurt or tearing my ACL or not being able to play ball, where's the place that I want to go to get an education? And that's why, to me, Miami was the choice, you know, without a doubt, because I, at that time, I'd been guided at least enough by my parents to understand that this scholarship in football is about getting an education. It's not about the next level. And I think people lose sight of that. And I was watching something, and Charles Barkley was talking about that. He was talking about some of the equality issues and some of the things that go on in different towns, depending on the diversity, the race of kids, the income of areas. And a lot of it comes from, you put your hands, you ask kids in schools, how many of them want to be professional athletes, right? And if 90% of them are raising their hand, I don't know if we're necessarily setting realistic goals for kids. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But at the same time, you're not shooting down dreams. You just want to make sure that we're putting emphasis as they get older on what college, what other occupations are out there, and make sure that that's always a part of the process. It's harder and harder because everything's NIL money now, and everything's, you know, $50 million a year and flashy this. So it's a challenge to deal with that as a parent right now. And I think that's part of the hardest things going on with these kids is to have good parenting without being influenced too much by the day-to-day nonsense that social media is and all this money and flaunting around. So, you know, that's, I kind of went off a little bit, but you know, I think that was the reason I went to Miami. It was strictly because of the education involved. And, you know, I met wonderful people by it, and it worked out awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, man. That, I mean, you know, it's funny because the first time I went to Oxford is when I moved in. And
yeah, I get it.
Yeah. And it was, honestly, it was the education piece. And, it, you know, I knew that part would be there. And that was the premise of, you know, me going that direction. You know, tell us a little bit about just your first experiences, man, on campus. And I mean, I was a roommate to a defensive back, so I knew a little bit about the football grind and the meetings and the games on Saturdays and the Sunday practices. But Talk to me a little bit about just your first time, you know, hitting that campus, hitting, you know, hitting the field for the first time. Like, how was that experience for you?
I'll tell you a quick story. So I committed to Miami, and my buddy's father talked to me. He's like, hey, do you know anything about this Roethlisberger kid? And I go, I've never even heard of him. I don't know what you're talking about. And he's like, dude, I watched him play in the playoffs last year. He's solid, man. He's pretty legit. And I'm like, all right, we'll see when we get there. And, you know, I came in, you know, pretty confident in myself and my abilities. And I remember, you know, seeing Ben, and at that time, Ryan Hawk was there in the same class as him, and they were kind of cohabitating this quarterback. And I remember getting there and watching them practice and feeling like, you know, I can hold my own with these guys. And as a freshman, you come on, and most of your reps are with the you know, the scout team, which is nice because you go against the number one D. So you're really getting tested against good ball players. And I remember just throwing lights out pretty much most of my freshman year. Like, I would travel. I'm redshirting, but I would travel to games. I mean, that was fun because you know you're not playing, but you get to experience everything about it without losing a year. So I went to, you know, I go to Michigan the first game of the year. We go to Iowa. We're going to Ohio State. We're going to Marshall. We're doing these games, going to UC. And, you know, and I'm not having to worry about playing in the game. I can just warm up. And I remember just warming up, and I'm feeling good about myself. And I really felt great about that freshman year. And I remember toward the end of the year, as Ben started kind of coming into his own, I realized that he was a different level of special. And I remember Shane Montgomery, I go, coach, I can't do that. I can do some stuff, but I can't do that. And that's when he knew Ben was kind of a step above and was going to be a special dude. But at the end of my freshman year, I think God intervened. At the end of the year, we're throwing, I remember this practice, and we're out on a practice field, and I'm just throwing routes with some receivers that the coach wanted me to throw. And I remember sitting there, and I mean, it's just ball after ball, just on a rope, right where I want it to be. I was like, dude, if I'm throwing this good my freshman year, I'm going to be unreal in 3 or 4 years. I remember thinking that to myself. Mm-hmm. And it's like the Lord said, you know, you need to humble yourself, young man. And I went snow skiing that winter, even though my dad told me not to. And I ended up, you know, going too fast down the mountain like a 19-year-old kid would do, and end up landing on my shoulder and separated my shoulder. I did it actually twice that weekend.
Man.
And I came back to campus. I couldn't wash my hair. I couldn't do anything. And so I had a couple weeks there where I tried to fight through it. And I went to go lift with Coach D, and he's in there. He's like, what's wrong? He's like, dude, I busted my shoulder. And I never threw as good in my entire career as I did my freshman year of college, from his strength and consistency and whatever. So yeah, that spring we had to push spring practice back a little bit, because I think Ben actually had an injury. So it was me and JD Vonderhyde, and I'm coming off of three months of rehab to try to get my arm strength up. So, you know, that first year was a lot of great experiences, seeing what Miami football is about. And we were a pretty good team, and we had a history of being pretty successful, coming off Travis Prentice and Mike Bath leading some awesome games as the quarterback, and Roethlisberger having a bright future. And, you know, by me redshirting, it put me a year behind him. But it was some ups and downs that freshman year. And from that point on, really, I had to build up my strength and do it a little bit differently from a rehab standpoint. I'm not saying it was coming back from ACL surgery, but it was a challenge the rest of my career, you know, navigating that shoulder sprain.
Yeah, man, I didn't even know that, man. That's I didn't even know that. You know, and one of the things I really enjoyed, though, just when you're telling your story, I'm just thinking back, because I came in 98, 99. And at the time when I came in, you know, Miami, you just didn't hear a lot about it, but you always hear like the MAC upsets, or like you'll hear certain things, but kind of like you, I was so high on other schools that I just didn't really, you know, like when I got there, I was like, oh, this is different. And I came right in on a high time in sports, like you said, Bath, Prentice, Juwan, you know, Dustin Cohen, you know, Trevor Gay. I mean, it was just like, and I believe they went 10-1 that year. They lost one that year and didn't get a bowl, but like, you know how now, like, ESPN is, like, on every campus? Like, for ESPN to show up, it was special back then. And they showed up at our campus. So I was like, this is jumping, you know? Like, it was exciting. And then I played on the Hoop Squad that year with Wally, went to the Sweet 16. Like, it was just a high time, I mean, on campus. And then, you know, comes Ben and then yourself. Like, I felt like I experienced, like, three different, you know, like, genres of just, like, the errors is what I want to say.
It was, it was a lot of fun seeing the student section and seeing the fans locally and regionally support really all the successful teams. Basketball, I mean, Wally kind of started it.
Yeah.
In that group getting the national attention and kind of then, you know, Ben coming in. I mean, we used to that stadium was full, bro. That was 37,000 people. And that, you know, I can't say I've been a long time since Miami's seen over 30,000 people, and it was consistent. And we had a number of years there with, you know, Ben's last couple of years, and it extended into my 2 years where there were 30,000+ people consistently at our games. And that brought a different era of excitement, like you said. And it was a special really 10 years of Miami athletics.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I say, I got to see multiple years because I was there from 98. My graduation year was 02, but I stayed for 2 years of grad school. So I got to see your years. And man, it was just and I think that's why it's so special to some of us, because, you know, being on campus and being an athlete. And for me, I favored the football players because I loved football, and I actually stopped football to play basketball, but football is one of my first loves. And so I really like kind of favor. So like I would even stay in the summers and work out with the football team just because I just wanted to stay in shape. But that was kind of some of my favorite type of working out, you know?
Yeah.
And then with Coach D being around, I mean, you already know you was going to get some good work. So, and but yeah, man, it was some great times, man. Before we move forward a little bit, talk to us about maybe just one or two, just like high times for you, like just one or two of those moments that it was just like the pinnacle for you being there, like that kind of like one of those you'll never forget type of moments at Miami.
You know, I don't know if my success ever reached a lot of the pinnacles. I feel like most of my stuff was close and sometimes lived vicariously through others. And, you know, obviously, you know, I was a backup when we won the MAC championship, you know, when Ben's junior year. We ended up winning the East side, but lost in the MAC championship game my junior year. And then senior year, it was right before that transition of all the bowl games. And we ended up not getting into the MAC championship because three-way tie. So we didn't get a bowl my senior year. Now, but there were a lot of good games where throwing for 350, 400 yards on national television, beating UC. I mean, you realize the last time Miami beat UC in football was 2005 when I was playing.
Wow. Didn't realize
17
that.
Years of losses. You know, so I think that game, unfortunately, that rivalry has gotten a little lopsided, a lot lopsided. And, you know, that was a big deal for us. And that was a big deal for me. That was my first game, you know, nationally televised game my senior year, and kind of kicked off my senior campaign, really. So UC was a big game. I think I threw for 379 or something like that game. OU, we consistently beat. They weren't really much of a rivalry, but Temple threw for 400 yards, which is cool playing NFL Stadium. And then really it kind of ended up getting invited to the Hula Bowl my senior year. You know, the nice thing about that is you're really getting to see yourself for the first time competing against other seniors who are, you know, all-star caliber. Now, it wasn't necessarily the Senior Bowl, but it was one of three Senior Bowls. And, you know, just seeing the other guys and knowing that, you know, I can play with this kid from Missouri, and I can play with this kid from Michigan, and I can play with this kid from – and so you really realized during that process, and honestly the next month or two when you go down – like I went down to Alpharetta, Georgia, and trained with Competitive Edge Sports with Chip Smith. Talk about a dude. You want to talk to a guy sometime that lives a life of faith and love. Like, that guy is training, you know, athletes all over the country. he met me at the train station, picked me up, took me in. He sends me letters. He sends every one of his players Thanksgiving wishes and holidays. Said he reached out last year because he was up in Canton training former players, and came down with his son and took my family out to dinner. Like, that's a dude. So we made some really great friends training in Alpharetta, Georgia. So I think, you know, Charlie Whitehurst and Steve Weatherford was down there at that time. A couple good Mac guys that were, you know, receivers and quarterbacks that you're comparing yourself to, and you're down there going down there with the same goal of getting as good as you can to get ready for that pro day and for the combine and all that stuff. So, I mean, that to me was the process of seeing myself grow and compete and knowing that although, you know, we're at the MAC, which may not be the pinnacle of the NCAA, once you see those guys, that you knew you could compete against them. And that's why I think we had a lot of success with our football programs.
Yeah, and from the outside, man, of course, like I said, I was there in the heartbeat of it. Wasn't a football player, of course, but in the heartbeat of it, man, I just really feel that the teams that came through there, those 6 years I was there, man, I mean, the guys, including yourself, I'd put up against anybody in the country, man, the work ethic, you know, just the program that we had, the strength conditioning program. I mean, I believe personally it's a top-notch experience that you're not missing out going somewhere else. You know, I believe that Miami just afforded that on a lot of fronts. I know the basketball front for sure. You know, even with the new facility that was built, like on our way out, you know, that thing was nice, you know, the weight room and stuff like that, man. I believe it's just a place where any athlete can go, especially on the football side, and get what they would get anywhere else. And you know, like today I talked to a lot of athletes and they're still kind of D1, high major, this and that or whatever. And sometimes you can miss out on opportunities that, like, I wouldn't trade Miami for nothing. You know, it was a great experience. You know,
the American Conference in general is, I think, great competitive sports and a lot of opportunity for people who do the right thing and work hard and don't necessarily haven't been gifted, you know, 6'7", 275 frame. You know, there are plenty of those guys, but, you know, where work ethic and effort you're putting in the weight room and effort you're putting on the field to get better really gives you opportunity to do that. And I think the MAC and Miami in general are special programs.
Yeah, I do believe that. So, man, finishing your college career there, of course, you know, football's over, season's over, and you got a little bit of time, of course, got to finish classes or whatnot. Were you thinking pro at the time, or, you know, what was your mindset at the conclusion of the last tick on the clock? What were you thinking?
Yeah, I mean, if you went back to my senior year, a couple of the games where I struggled, unfortunately, were on national television. One being in Northern Illinois, I think we struggled just offensively getting anything done, and they did a great job really game planning for us. And then Bowling Green, I remember Bowling Green, winner wins the MAC East or whatever it is, goes to the MAC Championship. And, I mean, there were probably 25, 30 mile an hour winds in this crazy storm. It was ESPN on like Tuesday night.
I remember that. So
it was supposed to be a 7 p.m. game. And it's about 6:45, and they're postponing the game. They said, hey, it should be clear by 8. Then we'll go out and play. So we all came back in the locker room. We're hanging out in the training room, you know, getting something to eat, just kind of whatever. And as I'm sitting there watching the radar, they're like, hey, let's go. Get your helmets on. We're like, dude, it's 7:15. We're right in the middle of the storm. Like, in 30 minutes, we're good. Like, why are we going out there now? They said, well, ESPN will drop us if we don't go out and play.
Wow.
So we went out and played in this monsoon. And it started off, I think they went down. They scored. We got the ball. Went to do a little dump down pass to the running back. It was high. Hit off his fingers. Got picked. They scored. Get the ball back. We had a third and long, actually right in the hands. Ball's, you know, ball's wet, it's raining. Came out, popped out. We ended up having to punt the ball. Snapper snaps it over dude's head, punter's head. They pick the ball up on the 5. They score a touchdown. We got down like 21-0 in like 3 minutes.
Man.
And at that point, like, it just, we couldn't recover. Like, we couldn't recover. We couldn't do enough offensively to get back. So it ended up being kind of a disaster of an outcome for us. And for me, I'm not a player who's just going to walk off and pad my stats. Like, I'm going to take shots and end up, you know, overall end up throwing 5 interceptions. And although those 5 interceptions, the last 2 or 3 were just me taking shots on 3rd and 15 or whatever it was, you know, ended up hurting me. And why I say that is because at that time, the people who chose who goes to the combine and who doesn't are watching these midweek games to see what these MAC players are about. They don't have exposure, all that. So although I went to OU the next week and threw for 350 and 3 touchdowns and we beat them by 30, you know, that game didn't get seen by the guys choosing. And so after I finished up, literally that was right over the Christmas holiday, and I get a call from my agent saying that I did not get picked for the combine. And, you know, that to me was killer, because where I competed best was one-on-one in those situations. Would put me up next to the dude. Let me show you my arm strength. Let me show you my consistency. Let me show you my footwork. And next to this guy, and that's where in the combine I truly feel like I would have shined. So it that was tough for me. It put a lot more emphasis on my training down in Georgia, put a lot more emphasis on my pro day to give myself a shot at it. So yes, was it a goal of mine? Absolutely. I knew from the history of playing, being next to these guys and throwing, that I could throw as well as anyone in the country. I just had to make, you know, get the opportunity to go in there and show it. So pro day was good, went real well. After the draft, I'm in a situation where they didn't have to draft me. I wasn't on a lot of people's radar. I got offered as after the draft to come on and be a free agent for the Bengals, the Browns, and the Colts. All guys locally that probably see me play more than, you know, everybody else. And at that time, the Colts said they were going to keep 3 active quarterbacks, and they only had 2 on the roster. So I just had to beat out whoever came in as a rookie. Bengals and Browns each had 4 guys on the roster. So for me, it made more sense to go to Indianapolis. You know, hindsight, they didn't end up keeping 2 active. They only ended up keeping 2 active quarterbacks. So I really ended up spending most of my time in Indianapolis on practice squad. So I didn't get paid like some of these guys got paid. But you don't know that going in. You look at the decision in front of you, and I really was so thankful for my time in Indianapolis as a rookie coming in and being there with Peyton and Dallas Clark and Marvin Harrison and Reggie Wayne and Robert Mathis and Freeney and these dudes. I mean, these were just – and knowing that I can compete and play at that level was awesome. To be coached by Tony Dungy and Jim Caldwell and those guys, I mean, that was fun. I'll tell you that right now. That was awesome.
Man, it's good stuff though, man. I mean, you know, to be at that college level and then to be able to go to that next level, honestly, in any capacity, I believe is, I mean, it sounds like it was something amazing for you. And then even with your time there, man, had an opportunity to get a ring. Talk a little bit about just the excitement around that and just how all that, you know, transpired for you, like even mentally, like just being able to be a part of that with, you know, go back several years, you were really focused on the education and going to the best place, but then getting the education and being able to be a part of that at the same time.
It was, you know, it's something that I'm, you know, thankful for. I got to rookie camp. It was me and 2 other kids, 1 from Temple and 1 from San Jose State. And we didn't get a ton of reps outside of rookie camp. So when we did get an opportunity, I remember going and practice one day and got like the last reps of practice. And yeah, I had a nice little touchdown play in the corner and just high-fiving Peyton afterward. I was like, that's pretty sweet. You know, I mean, that's just and so I'll tell you a couple stories about my time there. I remember, so rookie camp, coach is trying to install everything he can in a couple of days. So, you know, just getting our feet wet and figuring out. When the players report for OTAs, you know, I'm sitting in a meeting room. It's me, Sorgi, Peyton, the other 2 quarterbacks, Jim Caldwell, and they're showing something on the board. And I start asking questions. I go, Coach, what coverage is that? He just looks at me, and Peyton looks at me and just kind of shakes his head. I go, All right, I get it. It was his time in the meeting room. So for the rest of the year, when we're in the meeting rooms, I kept quiet. And then when he left, you know, then I could ask my questions. But he was always real respectful and helpful with how he led the team. I remember coming in after, so I got no reps in training camp. We were at Terre Haute at that time. And the fourth preseason, which is the last preseason game, last drive of the game, I get a shot to go in. And, you know, to me, just being on that field, one, in the warm-ups, first game was in Minnesota, you know, I didn't play. Like, being on there, warming up in the NFL stadium, like, it's a feeling you never forget. And so I was – the Bengals were at Indianapolis at the RCA Dome, and my family's there. The last drive, we ended up going down. I think I completed, like, 4 or 7 passes, moving the ball. And there's this guy named I won't call him out. He came that week, and we ran a double post concept. We're probably on the 45-yard line or so going in, and a double post concept against cover two converts to takeoffs on the outside. And I remember it was like a play action to the right, and I faked the running back, and then the running back's responsible for blocking the wheel linebacker to make sure if he comes, he's blocking him. Well, he ran right by him. And so when I think, I look, and he turns around like, hey, throw me the ball while his dude's about to blast me. And so I remember throwing it just as far as I could to the sideline where they converted to the corner there, or in the corner on the takeoff. And I remember he hit me so hard. I was bruised from my elbow to the middle of my ribs. It was Frosty Rucker. He was a dude at that point. And I just remember, like, as he's hitting me, I'm going down. I'm just kind of watching the ball as I'm going onto my back. I'm watching that ball take off, and dude, in the end zone, right into his hands, right through his hands.
Oh,
I could have been, you know, 5 for 8, you know, 75, 80 yards and a touchdown by one drive. Instead, now I'm 4 for 8. Next play, I throw a pick. Then I'm 4 for 9 with a pick and 35 yards. So, you know, it's just how the little things like that can change the course of your career. You know, because if I go out there and do that, complete that pass, getting blasted, and then maybe they feel pressure to keep me active instead of on a practice squad. And, you know, it is what it is. But I was fortunate, even though I didn't make the final roster, they asked me to come back as the third string practice squad quarterback. And we went that year and really had an awesome squad. I'll tell you two stories real quick. One, I remember coming in the first, like, week of practice, and you come in for breakfast and they got everything laid out. You got all your options, man. You can tell them what you want. They'll make you stuff. They have food all sitting out. They got menus and they have, you know, all these fruits to make smoothies. So I'm making these 24-ounce smoothies. You know, I didn't come from a ton of money. So it's like, these are like $8 smoothies I'm making, you know? So every morning, so I'm sitting there and Peyton walks in and kind of looks at me and just raises his head up. And I go, I think he wants a smoothie. I think that's what that's supposed to mean. So I make him a smoothie. I bring it over to him. It's on like a Tuesday, and I go back, sit down, and eat my breakfast. Next day, I'm sitting there, same thing. He walks in, kind of looks at me and nods his head. I go, well, I guess I know what I'm doing for the rest of the year. So every week, I think 2 or 3 of the days of practice, you know, I expected when he came in, I gave him a smoothie. I remember making a smoothie. He's like, I'm making 60 ounces now because me and him, if I didn't taste, if I didn't like it, I dump the whole thing out. I start back over again. So unfortunately, you have to be humble and understand that what he thinks about you can also determine how long you stay on that team.
Yeah.
And, so we did that for a year. And, you know, so that was my role, that and getting subs and doing whatever it took. Like, I'll do whatever it takes to contribute to stay on that squad. And we did, you know, I got some of the reps, me and Sorgi split some reps with the scout team. And then my final thing, being able to take my family, I think we got to purchase 10 tickets to take our family to Miami, Florida, my dad, my grandfather, my grandparents, my mom, my family, my uncles, like get them down. And my wife at that time, Christy, we got engaged down in Miami. To be able to have that experience for them as much for me was the pinnacle, man, to be able to go down there and win that Super Bowl. And, you know, although I didn't get any playing time in the game, there's two things where I said I contributed to that victory. One, our assignment was before the game to kind of go through all the film. of really our year and see, you know, why, where we struggled. So Sorge and I spent hours and hours and hours breaking down film and talked about situations to where we were doing, you know, maybe we weren't getting guys out in coverage when they're going cover two. So we're losing a receiver out in coverage and things that we went through. So we were breaking down a lot of stuff to help, you know, do whatever we can to make sure that, you know, Peyton had the best opportunity to win. The offensive coordinator knew what they were doing, as well as I remember going, they give you 80 footballs, right? They got NFL logo on them. They're all Super Bowl 41. They're ready to go. And the guys in the management, the managers spent 2 weeks buffing these balls and rubbing them and putting them in heat and doing whatever they can to get these balls ready to play, right? Mm-hmm. So we go down to Miami, and we're practicing at the Dolphins facility. And it's the Saturday walkthrough before the game. Peyton's got to take these 80 balls, and he's got to pick 40 of them to use in the game, right? So he goes through 80 balls. He picks two, right? I take these balls. He'd been working for weeks on these balls. So I pick them up. I do, these are slick. I was like, these are really, really slick. And so yeah, I'm not getting any reps at that point. Like I'm just – and so I take one of the managers, and I go over there, and I take the ball old school, 10 yards apart, bounce that ball halfway, skip it off the grass for a little while. I take it, but I go, Peyton, how's his ball? He goes, perfect. Next thing you know, we got 20 dudes lined up all the way down the field, just slamming 80 footballs into the grass and getting them ready. 15, 20 minutes later, he takes it. I think he approved like the first 40 out of 45 footballs.
Oh, wow.
So although those guys may have played the game, I feel like my contribution to the victory of the Super Bowl was maybe slightly overlooked. So it was good, man. It was a lot of fun, a lot of experience, a lot of great people, and Dungy was a class act. And man, I would take any of those guys back to Thanksgiving dinner with me because they're just wonderful individuals. And you'll see that with Jeff Saturday, and that's why they kind of went that route, I think.
Yeah. No, man, that's awesome stories, man. You know, that's one of the reasons I love doing these because, you know, the backstories and just understanding, you know, what somebody may have been through or their experiences, man. Like, you know, and me just knowing you, like even some of those things I didn't hear. I mean, I heard a lot of your story. I'm not sure if you remember when you came up to speak to our youth ministry. Yes, in Lima that year, you know, but some of those intricate things that you just shared, man, I didn't really know, but that's really cool stuff, man. Just gives you a picture of sometimes what goes on behind the scenes, man. Like, so that's really cool, man. It just sounds like you just had such a great experience, man. And your family, you know, that experience, I know that's one of those unforgettable types of things, man. And, you know, just can really hear your heart, man, in terms of just being willing to be a blessing, man. And just having that focus on others and making sure they're fine and that they're having a great experience. So, man, it's just a great story, man. And I so appreciate you, you know, taking time to just share, man. And before we get out of here too, man, I want to just allow you the floor to just share, you know, maybe some tidbits or some inspiration, man, that you received in your life that you use to keep yourself going in tough times. I mean, that could have been when you busted your shoulder and had to keep going or whatever the case, when, you know, even after you got that that hit and threw that ball and they dropped it, like, but you had to keep going, you know, that could have been like a man, that should have happened. I didn't make it. Could have took you a different direction mentally, but what's something, man, in your life that has kept you that when you had rough times, man, just kind of kept you going?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think the biggest thing that becomes a challenge is losing people you love. And I know I lost some really close friends of mine when I was in college. One my freshman year, end of my freshman year, another one the week before actually the MAC championship game, my sophomore year. And I think, you know, loss like that ends up, you know, opening some doors, and for me it opened more of a religious door that I'd not been exposed to. Although I went to church classes and stuff growing up, I was never really as heavily involved in religion. I think I was just looking for answers and looking for explanation and help. And I think you know, the beauty of what we have now with social media, as much as
there are a lot of things that it can be wrong if not used correctly. The beauty that we have is we have at our fingertips access to so much information for free and access to so many inspiring individuals who are living the life and showing you a playbook of how to do things. And there's two people I'm going to give a shout out to that I recommend you follow. If you haven't, one is a former athlete. And that's why I kind of mentioned him briefly down in Georgia where and he was living a different lifestyle back then. His name is Steve Weatherford. And Steve played, was a punter at Illinois. Steve went to the Saints and the New York Giants, won a Super Bowl. And he's got a family, six kids right now. But, you know, he gets real honest and he moved from out west. I think he's out in California, moved to Texas and relocated his family and really has transitioned in his entire life to leading others. And man, if you don't follow him, you should follow him because he is doing wonderful things. And it takes a special person and a special emphasis and intentional decision to do what he's doing. But he's living his life for others. Another guy that is more local that I've just been talking to lately, who just comes, he's actually coming out with a book next week. His name is Kurt Tucker. He's based out of Tip City in Troy, Ohio, in that area. And another one, like he actually spent a lot of time with Weatherford out there, and they do some man training and some religion training and really intentional about their growth and their family. So I think you have an opportunity to choose who you emulate and to choose who you lead and live a life after. And how we do that affects our family. And I am not a perfect individual. And I'm working on trying to do better for my family and for my kids. And I think that's a daily challenge. So that, you know, that those things are opportunities for us to really look at ourselves and hopefully appreciate the opportunities we have, be thankful for being alive and you know, if we are healthy, being healthy. I think sickness has a way of making us understand that if we are healthy, how blessed we are, and having the people in our lives for the time we do, you really have to appreciate it. So, man, just thankful for my wife and kids and my family who've been so good to me. And like I said, I have no complaints, man. I'm just thankful for that and health and for the opportunity to know guys like you and have an experience at Miami that developed and encouraged all these relationships and all these men that are leading across the country and had the blessing to all graduate from Miami University. So that's it, man. It was pretty awesome and no complaints. And I encourage anybody who's thinking about going to Miami to look deep into it, because I think it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, man, I second that, man. It's a great experience, man. You know, grateful to cross paths with you and definitely grateful for the continued connection. You know, it's always great to, you know, look years down the road, man, and still be able to give a call or a jingle to somebody you met back 20 years ago. And, you know, it seemed like it went so fast, man. But it seems like we were just walking on campus yesterday. Like, it really does. Like, you know, going back for my first time, you know, it was just like, wow, it just seems like it just goes so fast. And here we are like 20 or so years later. And so, you know, but like I say, I'm grateful, man. And I appreciate you taking time, man, to hop on and tell your story. You know, I know it'll be inspiring to others. And great to hear that you and your family are doing well and healthy and strong and just enjoying life, man. So like I say, I appreciate you taking this time to share your story.
Yes, sir. Good to hear from you, brother. And I think you're doing awesome things. So glad to reconnect.
Thanks, man. Look forward to our continued connection, man. So, hey, everybody, that was Josh Betts, you know, great friend, you know, love the story. Make sure you guys check this out. Share it with somebody that you feel like would be inspired. And we'll keep doing these. So until next time, we'll see you on the next episode.